let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Roland Lazenby has been called the finest sports biographer of our time, and he's done it again. Just released Magic, the Life of Irvin Magic Johnson, the definitive biography of the basketball legend and now a successful entrepreneur. A must-read, can't-put-down masterpiece, over 5 years in the making and over 400 individual interviews. Roland is the author of the international bestsellers Michael Jordan, The Life, and Showboat, The Life of Kobe Bryant. He's talked about both of those on our program. Roland has had a 45-year writing career, interviewing NBA players, coaches, staff members, writing extensively about the league, and the author of over 60 books. Back with us on This Week in America, renowned sports writer and biographer Roland Lazenby, author of Magic, The Life of Irvin Magic Johnson. Roland, a pleasure to have you back with us. Thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having me, Rick. What a joy.
Yes, what a wonderful book that you've written, and we could do 7-8 hours, but buy the audio book, buy the book, and you'll get everything in there. We're going to just touch on the surface of some of these today, and I'd like to start about going back to his foundation, that ground floor, where he grew up in Lansing, Michigan, became Magic the basketball phenom, as well as the man. You do an excellent job talking to former coaches back there, former school administrators, friends, and family. Talk about the pickup games and the public courts there that established who Magic was, what in grade school. Talk about the importance that had on shaping him.
Well, his signature move, of course, is the no-look pass. And I have witnesses swearing that he was throwing no-look passes at Main Street School as a sixth grader. And, of course, that is what Magic used to set the agenda. He changed the game. He changed coaching. He changed his teammates. They all had to do things the way he wanted to do them because he was all powerful. He was the tall boy who could get the rebound and control the ball and take off on the fast break. And that really allowed him to control the decades ahead.
You talk about the high school coaches is talking and saying, I don't know if all of the players on the team understand what he's going to do. He knows they're open before they know they're open. It really was difficult playing, trying to adjust, because nobody had ever seen anything like this before, had they?
No, they had not. And that was true at every stage. That was true, obviously, yes, in junior high. It was true in high school. It was true in college. You know, the players at Michigan State, when he went there, they quickly found themselves ducking those no-look passes. And the older and the better the players got, when he got to the NBA, they would get quite angry because they would get caught, and it would be embarrassing to get hit upside the head with the ball. But Magic was going to drive that agenda one way or another.
You mentioned in there of an NBA photographer who's saying, I never know where to look. And you think about it, he's there. He's trying to capture all of the action in the game. And he has no idea what Magic's going to do when he's coming down the court. And you talk with an NBA referee who's saying, I got a real hard time following this guy so I can follow the action. It was difficult for everybody. It wasn't as enjoyable for them as it was for us, at home watching.
Well, I will say, the fans had immense fun with it all, and that was Magic Johnson, Irvin Johnson's point. He wanted everybody, when they came to the game, to watch him play, to have immense fun. Now, that wasn't the sole agenda. He wanted to win as much as anyone has ever wanted to win, but he wanted it to be fun, and he was a guy of, it's just hard to describe the boundless emotional intelligence he had, and he brought that emotion to the game in ways that, the NBA had not had. It just wasn't there, and it frankly wasn't there in a whole lot of American basketball. But at every stop, the gyms just transformed into these happy places.
With us on the program is Roland Lazenby. He's the author of the new book, Magic, the Irvin story, the life story of Irvin Magic Johnson, book available wherever books are sold, book available in audio form as well. Frank Layton, the coach of the Jazz, you have a quote in there. He said he made people want to see an NBA game, what you were talking about before. He made it showtime. And Buck Williams, who played in the NBA for years, said, Magic really understands it's about entertainment. He's one of the few, and maybe what the first, that really captured that. It's more than just the sports, it's entertaining sports.
You know, American pro basketball had struggled mightily. All of basketball, frankly, had struggled to really get the crowds. And they would. I mean, there were times and places where basketball was really popular. But American pro basketball struggled until in the 40s and out of the 40s into the 50s and 60s. Pro teams began staging doubleheaders with the Globetrotters.
That's amazing.
And people would come to see the fun of the Globetrotters and stick around to watch some of the NBA. But the point was that Magic Johnson had all of that fun of the Globetrotters, and he brought it right into a regular NBA game. And that really did usher in the age of basketball. What the phrase has been common for a couple of decades now. Basketball is entertainment.
Well, and he brought it to the forefront, and we never quite knew what he was going to do. You've got a quote in there. Chick Hearn, the radio voice of the Lakers, said God and his apostles could not have stopped that move. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible. You'd almost have to go back and watch the tape to make sure you saw what you thought you saw.
Yes, and there was a good thing that videotape was in development at that time as he was coming along, because you really had to watch it on replay.
It's just amazing. What a great story. Magic by Roland Lazenby, our guest on the program. Book available at Amazon, wherever books are sold. A theme in through his life is race, school integration issues in the 1970s, school busing there, pairing with Larry Bird that we'll touch on, and business successes based on the black consumer preferences. But let's talk about race and the school issues in the 1970s. At Everett High School, they really used him to sort of get through this period, didn't they? In fact, he's 15 years old, and the principal is sort of relying on him to help him with the race problems in the school.
Yes, and, you know, that extended beyond the principal. That really went to the administration. They had a lot of trouble in their hands trying to integrate parts of Lansing, including Everett High School. And it had been going on for several years. And they'd had fights, the throwing of rocks at buses as they arrived bringing black students. There was just tremendous levels of misunderstanding. And one of the things I wanted to do in the book is to go back and interview all of the people involved and sort of break down that integration moment. It's going to be lost, or I figured it would be lost, if we really didn't understand. Because these two cultures, you know, with segregation, had never really understood much about each other, black and white. And suddenly they were being brought together to try to end basically centuries of injustice and to bring a more cohesive society. And there were just so many things that required reference points and greater context, but they needed a popular, energetic force in the middle of it all. And Magic Johnson was certainly that. He showed remarkable ability, and he really did figure out his own answers to a lot of things.
No, it's interesting because you talk about that in the book. The book is Magic, the life story of Irvin Magic Johnson. How sports had a role in bringing the races together. In sports, they knew that if we have, for example, a competitive basketball team at Everett, where the people are going and seeing black and white students working together to accomplish something, it really was, sports was a positive, wasn't it?
It was, and that continues to be. It's sort of the pageantry of race. Sports in America is and has been now more than 50 years, more than a half century, particularly with the rise of televised sports and the rise of the commercialization of sports. It has really become a way, as has music. There are other venues played that important role as well, but sports, of course, isn't a thing that attracts audience and attracts crowds and community and all of those things. And you have those rare leaders like a Magic Johnson who are able to bring things to the proceedings that really sort of energize a community to the point where the community is no longer focused on race.
Then we have his relationship with Larry Bird. Larry Bird said, I think that one of the first times he saw him is, I've never seen anything like this. A 6'9" point guard, a one-man fast break. Never seen anything like this before. Talk about the relationship they had, because that became national and went from college to the pros.
Right. You know, both sons of the Midwest, both about 6'9", both very capable ball handlers, both sort of showboat players. They weren't entirely mirror images of each other, but they were pretty close. And, you know, there was the 1978 off season in an international exhibition, and Kentucky had just won the national championship, and the coach of this international team was Kentucky coach Joe B. Hall, and he had the players, a number of the players from his Kentucky team, and so he played his players from that national championship team, and the two guys who would come along and be the figures who would change basketball and elevate it forever sat the bench. They would get some garbage time, but there was a lot of garbage time, and Joe B. Hall left him on the bench. So Larry and Magic first got to know each other by sitting on the bench, which is sort of a comical thing going forward.
You know, you'll find out so much about Magic Johnson. You think you know him. Here's another side that you'll find out. And it's a light and dark sides of Magic that come out in the book by Roland Lazenby. The book is just released. It's available wherever books are sold. Timed right, just in time for the holidays. The audiobook is available as well. Let's talk about, we mentioned it before, Showtime. Talk about that. You started covering the Lakers, I think, in 1988, written a couple of books on the Lakers, a biography of Jerry West. What was it like, Showtime, when you watch on television? That's as close as I got. But L.A. came alive, didn't it, during a Lakers game?
It really did, and it was not alive at all before Magic got there. It had some interest in when the Lakers won the title in 72. But, you know, a preseason an exhibition baseball game could get better TV ratings than the Lakers a lot of times. And by the late 70s, the Lakers had gotten Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but, you know, he was a bookish, quiet kind of guy, not really given to any displays of joy whatsoever. He actually looked pretty glum most of the time. The great Jim Murray said, if you looked at the Lakers, it was like watching guys carry a casket. And Jerry West, you know, the great perfectionist, was their coach, and it drove him crazy, the situation they were in. And the league itself was in terrible shape. TV ratings dropped 25% in the late 70s. And L.A.'s played, and Jack Kent Cook, who was the owner, played in his Great Western Forum. But the daggone Forum was losing attendance as well. And all of a sudden, here comes Magic with this flashy style and the big smile. And, I mean, it was just a ready-made package for Hollywood.
And I think if
Jerry, the whole thing blew up.
Well, yes, I don't want to just mention one thing, and then I want to talk about that. But Jerry Buss, I've always thought of him as this Hollywood celebrity type person. And as I'm reading, it's like he became the person I think he was after Magic Johnson appeared there and Showtime became popular.
Right. Magic Johnson provided a foundation for a lot of people to rise. And the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was winning Most Valuable Player awards, but the team wasn't winning. But suddenly, Magic brought all these teams. He made the athletes around Kareem much better. They had this fast-breaking style where the athletes could run and dunk and overwhelm other teams. It meant that, you know, when Red Auerbach was building the Celtics around Bill Russell, having a player like Bill Russell at the center of things allowed him to find these complementary players, very good players who became Hall of Famers. And that sort of Red Auerbach situation became available to Jerry West and also Bill Sharman with the Lakers as they acquired talent. And just like the Celtics in the 60s and starting in the 50s, actually gathered this momentum to really sort of overwhelm pro basketball, the Lakers were able to do it in a even more exciting decade, the 1980s. And Magic Johnson was the MC, the maestro, the guy who ran the show. And he was a figure in elevating the fortunes of so many people, including that of owner Jerry Buss.
Yeah, it's incredible. And so many stories in Roland's book, Magic, The Life of Irvin Magic Johnson. You'll find it available wherever books are sold. And as we run out of time here towards the end, I want to talk about the downside. And that was the shocking announcement that he had tested positive for HIV/AIDS. Talk about that. And let's do it from your perspective. When did you hear that? Where did you hear that? And what was your reaction? Someone who was intimate with Magic and the Lakers and NBA basketball.
I remember I was doing a lot of projects with the Celtics. And at that time, I was back home in Virginia when the news came on the TV. It was shocking that November. But I recalled the Celtics joking that Magic was really, really interested in the ladies. He wasn't too particular, that he was basically sweeping the streets. And that was an overstatement and in some ways, but not in others. And certainly not only was Magic caught up in that great Hollywood life. Well, let's face it, the owner of the team, Jerry Buss, was his partner in crime in a lot of that. In fact, Magic's high school coaches, when it all became, well, Irvin took too many field trips with Jerry Buss. That was what George Fox, Magic's high school coach, surmised. But the thing was, that culture was coming out of the 70s and all the drugs and, you know, Magic and Bird, those guys were extremely particular. They were too competitive to ever get involved in a lot of drugs of any kind. But there was that nightlife. And that, you know, the coaches, when Magic also got upset with his coach and essentially fired Paul Westhead as coach of the Lakers in the middle of Magic's third NBA season. And the fans everywhere got furious with him. And the high school coaches, Lakers were playing in Chicago, and they all got together. Magic was getting booed everywhere. And they all went down to Chicago to try to make him feel better about everything. And so Magic got them rooms in the Lakers team hotel. He had a big dinner after the game. He had everybody in an assigned seat in this restaurant and had this wonderful thing. And they all went back to the hotel afterward. And it was just absolutely thick with women on every floor. And the coaches went, Irvin, who are all these women? Are these prostitutes? And Magic looked at him and said, some of them are, but there are an awful lot of women out here who just want to get with an NBA player. And when Magic years later announced he was HIV positive, the coaches immediately thought of that visit to Chicago, and they understood what the public couldn't see, that it was a busy, busy thing.
Well, then you talk about how he misjudged, they misjudged the NBA welcoming him back. That was rough. There was a book tour. There were questions. It didn't handle it well. Talk about that, because it was really a dark period for him.
Yeah, it was. It was difficult. You know, having been through the pandemic, I think Americans today have a very fresh memory of fear, and the fear brought by contagion.
Yes.
And the fear of HIV and AIDS in the early 90s and the late 80s was substantial. And it could get particularly ugly if a child had come down with AIDS through no fault of his own. There was a fear that AIDS could be spread through non-sexual contact or other means. You know, Magic, to his credit, owned up to his HIV status and waded into that discussion. It was not an easy thing, but, you know, he was a big role in the Dream Team, which was a big factor in popularizing basketball. Then he started Magic Johnson's All-Stars, and he made a huge amount of money traveling the globe for years with a team of retired NBA players. And it was immensely popular. They played, if they could have set up a gym in Antarctica, they'd have played there too, because they played on every other continent. And, you know, Magic just made lots of money, took great care of the players, paid them well. But he was making the kind of money, the insane money that NBA players are making today. But that was the prelude to Magic Johnson theaters, to all the things he had dreamed about as a boy of being a businessman. It really, his recovery from the end of his career because of his HIV status really set up his life as a businessman.
And it's interesting, I got a minute or so left here, but his father was a role model as a businessman. And you talk about Magic, while even in high school and in college, was a DJ and set up a little business and was always sort of there looking at things from an entrepreneurial standpoint. His dad had a great influence on him, didn't he?
Oh, his father had tremendous influence in every way. Magic lost his father, Irvin Sr., this year. But Irvin Sr. shaped everything, and he would never tell his son what to do. But his son would know very close. He would know. For example, Magic did not want to go to Michigan State, but Irvin Sr. wanted that. He wouldn't tell his son that. But Magic had so much respect. He would never go against his father. When he wanted to leave after his freshman year at Michigan State and turn pro, he ultimately turned down lots and lots of money because he knew his father wanted him to stay another year at Michigan State. And so that father-son relationship, precious as it was, really was important because it shaped the whole direction of not just American college basketball, but the NBA and global basketball. And so it's a very special thing when you think about it.
Well, it's a very special book that you've written. Our guest has been Roland Lazenby. Boy, it's a pleasure to have Roland back in the program. We need to do this much more often. Magic, the Life of Irvin Magic Johnson.
It's always fun. It's always fun talking to you, Rick. Thank you.
We will do this again. I really enjoyed having a chance to read the book and having you on the program. The book is available wherever books are sold. Of course, information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We are back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.